Next case is 96-2481, Disciplinary Counsel and the Cincinnati Bar Association versus Patricia Boss. Mr. Gardner.
Get to page 16 of your brief. You say, therefore, relators respectfully request this court to impose an actual suspension from the practice, but you give no indication of what that period of time might be. Are you prepared to do that, you and your colleagues,
yes,
today?
Our position from the beginning, and I thought it was decided that a two-year suspension with an actual sit-out of 1 year, and the second year would be a probationary period. Various conditions that are appropriate to dealing with the folks who exhibit an alcohol problem.
So your suggestion then, or request today, is on page 14, respectfully submit should be suspended from practice of law for a period of 2 years, with the first year to be served and the second to be stayed upon certain conditions. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And what would those conditions be?
The ones
listed in the boards?
The ones listed in the boards.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Our full participation in the OLAP program, participation in the DAA program, monitoring with appropriate counsel appointed by disciplinary counsel or the St. Paul Association, and all of those would be part of that period of probation. In our brief, and we reiterate this morning that when approaching this matter initially, we recognized, at least we felt based on cases, that the appropriate sanction under no circumstances would be a death suspension, but that exhibiting an alcohol problem is obviously a source of mitigation. But we have stated throughout the course of these proceedings that it's an inappropriate concession to, or we felt, to drop the sanction all the way from an indefinite suspension simply to a respect to respondents' brief and arguing extensively, in which all of the problems that have been created in these six cases were attributed to the alcohol impairment, and that she has her alcohol recovery program under control. I think it's important to set forth for this court some of the sequence. Now, we had five grievances filed during the calendar year 1995, and throughout the early course of the investigation for the grievances, respondent blamed her problems not on alcohol, but she, in effect, lied to the investigators and blamed those problems on any teaching schedule. And it was only in the course of the investigation of the fourth grievance in August of 1995 that she finally made a submission to that effect. And throughout then, the last part of 1995, in the investigation of the Chef grievance, failure on the part of the respondent to participate and cooperate with the disciplinary council's investigation until the very end of the year, in which she admitted to the disciplinary council that she in fact had alcohol problem. With respect to the sequence of her recovery efforts, they are as follows. She started to attend AA meetings in April of 95. In May of 95, she was arrested for a DUI. She saw a counselor in June of 95. She was convicted as an habitual offender in July of 95. And then she was drinking until December of 95, when she sought advice from Jim Coogan and some other attorneys available to counsel folks with alcohol problems. And he recommended in December of 95 that she undertake the OLAP program. Then we go into 1996 during the course of the proceedings before the grievance court. In March of 96, she falls back and she's drinking alcohol again. It isn't until March of 96 that she has an effective relationship with a alcohol anonymous sponsor. She didn't start the OLAP program until 2 days before start processing that application, which allowed until 2 days before the panel hearing, and the OLAP contract wasn't entered into until after. As we cited in our supplemental authorities, there is the court in the case of Cleo Barber v. Bell, the most recent case applicable to the facts of this case. They're similar and they're dissimilar. In the Bell case, there were only four grievances. In the Boss case, there's six grievances. The Bell case involved no trust account violation. The Boss case involves pre-trust account violation. In both cases, the attorneys failed to return unearned fees. Both attorneys had a substance abuse problem. Neither attorney had actually enrolled in the OLAP program at the time of the hearing, and both attorneys used offensive language while acting as an attorney. This court, after giving consideration to the mitigations in the Bell case, found for a 2-year suspension, served one actual year, the second year on probation, and that's consistent with the argument that we have made throughout these proceedings. And the court in that case specifically said the guiding principle in all of our disciplinary proceedings is the public interest, and an attorney's right to continue to practice a profession in view of public trust. Our ethical considerations state standards of professional conduct towards which every lawyer should strive. Our disciplinary rules specify a minimum level of conduct below which no lawyer should fail. So we respectfully ask this court to impose the sanction of a 1-year sit-out with a probation in the second year.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Perlu.
Mr. Chief Justice, may I please report, what a policy I agree with, some of the vision policy, posture, and slightly adjustment here, and the support they have. This case, I think, represents a lot of things. I don't think that the commission found and the rights of fact and recommendation of Mrs. Voss coming to be that which is described thus far. The fact of the matter is that she had a moment when she acknowledged today her life probably saved by the related from insidious disease of alcohol. So there is no question about that. The DUI conviction, the life and personal disarray, and the symptoms that she exhibited through most of the all of these cases are predictable symptoms of the disease of alcoholism, and we understand that. When you look at the facts in this particular case, there are not the egregious, and I don't think, acts of the heart, which this court has addressed on numerous occasions. There is not a taking of client funds. There is not criminal conviction. There is not abuse of illegal substances, which in all the cases which this court has addressed, probably from flattery of one extreme to the most recent pronouncements as a man of death. I don't think that those are present in this case, even though in this case there were cases of improperly depositing client funds. At all times, this particular lawyer had a trust account, had a state account, and was monitored by a computer by the Hampton County Probate Court. Never in these cases did she take from clients. It must be noted that there is no indication of defalcation. Part of the harm that was due to these clients was caused, as I put out in my brief, by the fact that when Ms. Voss confronted these problems, she returned all funds to all clients on a timely, relatively timely basis in comparison to some of the cases which you see before this court.
Well, yeah, she did that, although not of her own volition, isn't that correct? I mean, she was forced, she even had to borrow money from her sister, I think it was, to pay the funds back to clients. I mean, that is some harm to clients, I would think, that she's taken their money or received their money as a fee and then not done the work and has kept the fee until someone confronts her with it and she finally returns the money.
Mr. Chief Justice, you're exactly right. My point being, though, in all these cases, either estates were open, clients were interviewed, petitions were filed in the domestic relations court. There was never a dispute that work was done, substantial work was done. But when these matters were addressed, Ms. Voss never tried to offset a quantum merit claim or say that in the title of any of the insufficient work, which I did. And by reason of that, there would naturally be, even if you build precisely as we were required by the profession, a defalcation in the trust account if she had done that. She had to, I think, supplement the trust account in order to make all of her clients whole without making any claim.
Well, and there is no restitution pending here. Everybody's been paid, as I understand. Is that right? There's no...
Everyone has been paid, and I checked with you later, even today. There was no financial harm that was actually done by any client, even in the Lanza case, which is the 75M Identity Life Order in the Domestic Relations Court. We submitted the exhibit in that case, which shows that when the final orders were journalized by the court, that exact same amount of money was ordered as spousal support in that case, with an additional, I believe, $5,000. But I am not, we have never perceived, Ms. Voss dropped below the standard that this court has set out over and over with the practice of law. Her insufficient representation of her clients, there is no question it's not up to the standard. And the alcohol abuse was not an excuse. I think that we are before this court on guidance. If we look at even the Board of Commissioners, I think that everyone has been mindful of the pronouncements which you, as the Chief, and the other justices have given us in these areas. When I talk at seminars to young lawyers, and they ask me what is the Supreme Court requirements of practicing lawyers, I do think that if I summarize it all,
I would suggest to you in this case that the absolute rule that we all know, is moving towards, is one that I don't think the board in this matter had thought was carved in stone. I think that what the board said is looking at all of the facts in this case, looking at this respondent and what she did, and looking, I think, particularly at the certification by the probate court, there is no question that for over a year and sometime prior to that, she has passed every random test for any substance of abuse, including alcohol and cocaine.
That's what I wanted to ask Mr. Burrow. Do you see her often or occasionally?
Now, Ross?
Yes.
We practice in the same community. We communicate all of the time.
How do you think she's doing now?
Your Honor, I honestly think she's doing extraordinarily well. But I also would note, and I think we later would confirm, that when she was in the sober state and in her recovery in front of the panel, she acknowledged that I hurt these people. When you lie to clients...
Yeah, I think that's established. I'm interested from, I guess, a human standpoint, how she's doing now.
From a human point, I meant this absolutely correctly. Although we are postured somewhat in an adversary posture, I respect the work that this certified grievance committee does, and my client, looking at her, knows that she created these problems, and she has. And her life is better for it, regardless of the sanctions that you impose. The only thing that I would like to suggest to the court is there also, for this privilege, I think, of practicing law, there's that real, I think, responsibility that you fess up, deal with these problems, and get into treatment as quickly as possible. I know that the board, in hearing this matter, felt not that her attorney was making these representations, but from every objective standard, random drug testing, a letter sent by the Hamilton County Probate Court indicating that every account and every matter was current and they were pleased with their level of practice. Even two of the clients that are named as grievance in this case currently were still represented by Ms. Voss with all this disclosure. I do think in the end, it's that insidious disease of alcoholism that caused the inability of Ms. Voss to adhere to the standard which this court commands. I do think that the public is and can be adequately protected by the list of sanctions which are proposed, every one of which Ms. Voss is going to get, including treating with medical doctors as well as consultants, OLAP, Alcoholics Anonymous, staying up to date with CLE, etc. Those are reasonable, I think, requests, not requests, but demands, that I think it's important to have the public.
I guess, Mr. Burlow, the Ms. Boss certainly represents a very positive example of how the discipline system in Ohio can affect very positively the life of a lawyer by using our considerable authority and power. To urge someone to get the help they need, and that seems to work in this case, certainly. I guess the question that the case presents to me is to what extent, given the fact that in your brief, I think, indicates, and you've stated here, that she seems to be on the road to being a recovering alcoholic, and is that. I guess the question then is, how much in the world, and I'm using the wrong word, but how much forgiveness do we build into the system for the deeds of someone, the acts of someone who acted the way they do when they're under the influence of alcohol? Should we just say, well, no time out of the practice because you're now recovering, and you probably wouldn't have engaged in that conduct had you not been an alcoholic, but But that sort of, it seems to me, and you know I've been a strong supporter of this, but it seems to me that's not...
I think that when you engage in type of conduct, which is before this court, that there is a presumption that privilege of practice is going to be denied to that practitioner. And I would like to think that that's a presumption that's very difficult, extraordinary, probably will not be granted by either the board or this court. But I do think that to the extent that we can have our practitioners deal with psychological, emotional problems, get treatment, that there might, that there ought to be a crack in the door to do that. And I'm also aware of language to yourself, Justice Cook has used, and our obligations to protect the public. I'd be doing a disservice to my client and I think to our profession if I would say that the alcohol, in this case, excuse this behavior. It absolutely does not. I can only look at the analogous situation, whether it's a police officer or a lawyer or a doctor. It's kind of dangerous when we tell a police officer that you get psychological treatment, that an evaluation of for you for promotion in the future, that that might be a factor that you might want to conceal in order to be successful. Not that that's true here. I would only say that the guidance that this court has given to the commission, and I think the practicing lawyers, is good guidance. I do think being aware of that, the board, I think we feel that this lawyer has gone through extraordinary demonstration to deal with that, and has not exemplified or demonstrated that behavior of defalcation to your account, stealing.
I assume you would, you're a leader of the bar I know in Cincinnati. I assume that you would agree with me that we do need to be sensitive to the variance or the gap between the gap in the sanction that we would render to a person who has not had an addiction problem and one who has had an addiction problem, that we don't appear to be saying with the person that has the addiction problem that you're not going to be held responsible at all for the fact that you had the addiction. If you go all the way back to the fact that the individual has some control over the addiction. That's my concern in this case, I guess, with the request that we don't have the respondent sit out at all. That it seems to me we may be going too far the other way. I guess that's...
I do understand. I think that's a difficulty, but if you're using syllabus language, Your Honor, I could see that where a person, a lawyer, demonstrates all of the effects of alcoholism, neglecting and attention, etc., but does not engage in an illegal substance, does not have a criminal conviction, does not steal from their client, engages in active, ongoing, extensive therapy, that should the commission or the court be convinced that was the factor, the problem, the extraordinary privilege of practicing law may be in certain circumstances given to that practitioner. I think that is all lack of good faith.
Thank you, Mr. Berlew. Mr. Gardner, you've saved 5 minutes of your time.
Chief Justice, and please the court. I'd like to address the issue of the alcohol impairment problem to reiterate the reality that Mr. Chief Justice stated better than I can, and that is that striking a balance between the harm that's been caused to six different people and being attentive to the needs of rehabilitation of a lawyer who seeks
fair. The question is, I think it is incumbent on this respondent, and it should be incumbent on other respondents with alcohol problems, to establish a higher burden of recovery proof than has been established here. While the severity of these disciplinary proceedings have rung bells to this respondent to do some things, I'm not so sure we don't need another bell. Because if this is all probation, she walks out of here tomorrow and she practices law. And monitoring and probation and OLAP testing, none of that will work if the respondent isn't ready. And I don't think that the respondent has established that she's ready. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.
Thank you.